take you where?
Hello and welcome to episode 67 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Prochko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
All right, so first up is going to be our hot topic of the week, which is a certain something that happened on Game of Thrones this weekend, and then we're going to follow that up with our big review of the week, which is of Tomorrowland. So first up, Game of Thrones. Christy, I'm sure you're eager to get to that one.
I am. Okay, so here's the thing. We're going to talk about Game of Thrones last episode. If somehow you haven't seen it and you haven't been spoiled by the internet and the world at large, jump ahead 5 minutes in the conversation. You can skip this.
But what happened? We should clarify, depending on when you're watching, this is the episode titled Unbowed, Unbent, Unbroken or something like that. I think it's episode 6.
Good point. Yes, it's episode 6 of season 5. Good point, Angie. Thank you. So as you guys know, I've been recapping Game of Thrones for spinoff this season. And Sunday night, guys, it hit me hard because we were having a good time. Fun things were happening. And then Ramsay married and promptly raped the shit out of Sansa Stark. And that's not something that happened in the book. And yes, there is a character who is raped by Ramsay, and she is kind of taking that character's arc and da-da-da-da. But the big debate is, should Game of Thrones have rape Sansa Stark, basically? And not can they, because that's a lot of people are trying to derail the conversation and have it be like, well, you can't say they can't do it. And it's like, I don't think anyone is saying they can't show rape on the show, because for one, they do a lot. It's more about the context of why this rape happened and why this rape is bothering people. And from my perspective, I was really bothered because Sansa is someone that, like, the audiences have never really warmed, never liked initially, and she was always getting shit from fans for being prissy and for wanting to just be a princess and for not wanting to play the Game of Thrones. But you know what? She survived. She made it through. She's not a warrior, but she still got through it all. And then she gets back to Winterfell. She has done these incredible strides in character, and this happens. And I felt like it was really cruel, and I know a lot of really cruel stuff happens on the show, but again, we're in the middle of the season, so maybe something's gonna happen that I'm gonna feel like this pays off. But right now, we're talking several days later, I still feel really raw about it. I still feel really angry about it, and I feel like if the point was supposed to show us how bad Ramsay is, we've been there, we've done that, we get it.
Yeah, I feel like the rape was, I feel like the show, it likes to shock us, and that's generally a quality that I enjoy. I enjoy being surprised, but I feel like sometimes they think that, oh, the only way to shock people is to do something really nasty, and I think that's what they did in this case. It feels really lazy, and I have to say, the thing, like, all the stuff that you said makes sense to me, but the thing I think that bothers me the most is that I have no faith that they will handle this storyline in a responsible manner. And I would love to be proven wrong. I would love to watch the next two episodes and be like, oh, I was such an idiot. I totally get what they were going for now. However, this is the same show that in season one raped Daenerys Targaryen, who is not raped in the books. She gives consent. She's like into having sex with her new husband, Khal Drogo. In the books, they turned it, in the show, they turned it into a rape scene for no goddamn reason. The same thing happened last season with Jaime and Cersei, where they're having sex, and in the books it was consensual. Like, she resists a little bit at first, but she eventually gives in. In the show, it's pretty unequivocally a rape, even if the creators for some reason didn't think so.
So on every level, I have me concerned. Like, last season we were fighting specifically about whether or not it was a rape, because the creators were like, oh no, we never meant it that way. And I feel like the show is made in this weird bubble where they are really not considering how the fans are going to interpret stuff, which is a bizarre way to go about making a franchise this big. Like, yeah, they should be true to their vision or whatever, but like, when the fandom is like, no, that was a rape, and then the show doesn't recognize it, there's a really strange disconnect. At least this time,
and hasn't learned
the show
from
seems
it
to realize that it's a rape. So I guess that's something. But it's like you said, I feel like they use rape as a cheap plot device a lot of the time to just be like, shocking, right? Just like when Ned got decapitated. And I really hate when people draw that comparison, because guys, most of us don't fear actually getting decapitated in real life, but rape is an actual fear that a lot of people have. So,
and one that just the show treats too lightly in
exactly
the past.
You shouldn't just poke that button to be like, right? Upsetting, well, right? There's a lot
maybe
of ways
it's
that they could have upset
us. I haven't read
us
the books, but personally, I mean, it didn't bother me at all. Like, I'm sad for Sansa because I was watching the episode I've watched since day one, and I'm invested in her character. And I think I just liked her a lot more than other people did, and I kind of have liked the arc that I've seen all season long throughout this season and all the previous seasons. But yeah, I mean, I kind of saw the moment coming from a mile away. I mean, we know what Ramsay was capable of. And then the second the second they started walking away after the wedding, I knew how he was going to treat their first night together.
That's a weird jump to make. Ramsay, they've showed him have consensual sex on the show. Him and Miranda have a weird kinky relationship, but that was a consensual relationship.
Well, just because someone doesn't do something before, it doesn't mean you can't assume they will do an evil thing later on. I'm not saying
it
doesn't,
but I'm saying that I don't think, you know, because he's an asshole and because he's a sadist, automatically meant he was going to have to rape Sansa. I don't think it automatically meant it.
I think it definitely teased it to me. It was not out of character for him at all.
I think it was in character, yes.
It's definitely in character. And I kind of liked the door that it opened with Theon and Sansa maybe finding forgiveness between each other and maybe somehow, you know, reestablishing a little bit of a relationship. It was a disgusting way to make that happen, but I don't want to belittle anybody's passion for the show by saying this, but it's a TV show, you know?
I don't accept that at all, because the thing is, like, I think part of the reason people are getting so upset about this is it reflects something in our culture that's kind of insidious, which I'm not going to get into because we should really wrap up. But I do think you make an interesting point, because a lot of people are complaining, and it bothered me too, that the last shot of the episode is Theon's reaction to what's happening to her, which makes it seem like it's about him and not about her. But I can understand the point of view that it's meant to not be about him, but about the connection of how he is relating to her and how that's going to affect the
show. I probably would have been a lot more upset about the moment had it ended on her with like an especially uncomfortable shot like that.
Maybe if they had done that,
I would be on the other side of this argument. But because they ended it on him and we barely saw any of that, maybe that's why I'm a little more forgiving. I don't know. But for me, it just felt like it worked within the show, within what they had set up for these characters. And rape is bad, but this is just like how this world operates. I mean, maybe it's not right that they've established that over and over and over again, but I also feel like it was meant as a shock moment to fans.
Like, it was meant to be like, ha! Because it's the same thing as, like, when they showed Jorah had that we should really move on. But when they showed that Jorah had contracted the grayscale, like, it was meant as a big, like, ooh. Like, and that feels cheap and gross to me, and it makes me angry. And honestly, if I weren't recapping, I'd probably give up on Game of Thrones at least for a little while, because I'm not looking forward to Sunday, and that sucks. But we're going to move on to Tomorrowland, because we'd already talked more about this than we probably should have. But it's cool. Tomorrowland. Take it, Angie.
All right. Tomorrowland, on a completely different note that has nothing to do with the previous
topic. No one gets
raped
in Tomorrowland. There you go.
That is true. Spoilers. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So, Tomorrowland by Brad Bird. Bound by a shared destiny, a teen bursting with scientific curiosity and a former boy genius inventor embark on a mission to unearth the secrets of a place somewhere in time and space that exists in their collective memory. That doesn't really make any sense. It's about Britt Robertson? Yes, Britt Robertson, who's like a teenage girl, and George Clooney is like a cranky old man who want to go back to this alternate dimension called Tomorrowland that they have seen. And also there's a robot girl played by Rafferty Cassidy who is amazing. So this is a script by Damon Lindelof, and if you have been following his career, you probably know that his thing is kind of disappointing people. And I say this as someone who's not as mad at him as like a lot of people in fandom are, but he's like the guy that, you know, he did Lost, he did Cowboys Prometheus, and Aliens, Star he did Trek. Prometheus, Star Trek Into Darkness, like, you get what I mean. And I feel like this is another movie that, I mean, him I don't have that much faith in. Brad Bird I had more faith in. I was hoping for better from Brad Bird. All that said, I actually like this movie, which makes me an anomaly among the three of us, because I don't think the movie really holds together under scrutiny, but I will say that while I was watching it, while I was experiencing it, I thought it was fun. I was like waiting to see where it was going. My inner five-year-old was just like clapping her hands because it's the kind of movie I would have loved as a kid. And I don't mean that like, oh, it's a kid's movie, so it should get off the hook for being stupid and not making sense, but I am saying there is some joy and some fun here, and as the movie keeps reminding you over and over, a refreshing sense of optimism as opposed to all the dark dystopian type movies we've been watching lately.
Now, having said that, I would forgive a lot for a kid's movie that doesn't make sense if I was on the ride, but this does not feel like a Brad Bird movie to me. It just felt so halting. Like, there's like four false start beginnings. It's like, we're gonna start the movie this way. Wait, go back. Actually, how about this? And like, I just was like, oh my god, start the movie already. And then we finally get into the plot, and I just felt like I was disappointed in how little actual adventure and action there appears to be in this movie, and how
most
much
of
it appears
is a chase
to be...
movie.
Yeah, and but a lot of it is Britt Robertson, who is adorable. I like her. I'd like to see more of her. I just didn't like this movie. A lot of it is her going, "Wait, what's happening?" And then people have to explain to her. If you guys haven't seen Tomorrowland, that was dead on.
I think she was a little too big in this movie for my taste. Like, it came off as a little goofier than I think maybe it was originally intended to, or in a way that at least could have served the plot of the movie better. But I think the fact that she was so big and goofy about it made the whole thing feel even dumber to me. I mean, the more I think about this movie, the less I like it. I actually walked out and I wasn't like, holy shit, that sucked. I was miserable in it. Like, there's some fun to be had with certain sequences, but the more I think about it now, the more disappointed I get, because there are so many plot holes, none of this makes any sense, and I think some of the messages that it's sending are just wrong,
the
too.
The message is, it's a really, really, really preachy movie. They literally stop the movie in the climax for 5 minutes so that they can spell out, like, so a character can actually give you a lecture on what the message of the movie is, which is a major weakness
in
the screenplay.
I said in my review for Spinoff that a lot of the script just feels like rejected motivational posters where people are literally just saying things like, you can save the world. We are the future. You need to be true to yourself. Feed the right wolf. That one's a little weirder, but it doesn't
make
much sense.
The one part of that, like, that vibe that I did like, though, was how, because I'm a big Disney World fan, which is part of the reason I was so psyched about this movie, and I did appreciate the fact that when they had George Clooney and Britt Robertson talking to the camera, something about that made me feel like I was, you know, stepping onto a ride and sitting down, and I was about to blast off, you know? But then it turned out to be one gigantic, epic first act, and then all of a sudden we were in the end of the movie, and things were going crazy. And I guess we should save this for spoilers. I'm not going to bring it up right now, but the third act of the movie makes little to
it's
no
weird.
Sense.
One thing I do like about it is Athena, even though I'm not completely convinced her character makes sense, but I like
I
that she's basically...
I adore Athena.
She's Small Wonder meets the Terminator, and I'm kind of into it. Like, she looks like an 11-year-old British girl with tons of freckles, which also just seeing freckles in a movie was
kind of
exciting.
There's also like a bit of
lie.
Like Mary Poppins to her. Like, she's just this person who comes in and seems like nonsense, but she's actually completely no nonsense and like very dry and bossing people around. And,
and
like,
the funny thing is, she like feels this. More real than any other character
she does,
in the movie.
Yeah.
Which she shouldn't for a reason. But everybody else is so incredibly one-dimensional, and she is just not at all. And I actually like believed that she really like felt those feelings too, whereas everybody was kind of playing
well. That's
they had
yeah
to.
There's like, she has a big speech in the end and you're like, no, we know, like, it's, you know, that's kind of the other thing is like, I get that it's a movie made for kids, but it treats kids like they're stupid.
Is it really made for kids though? Because I never got that impression until I actually saw the movie, and if I had seen this movie as a kid, I would like to think that I was a little smarter than that.
Then you were smarter than me, because
I
would have loved
like
it.
Well, I think that it's meant to tap back to that Amblin vibe of, like, where there is a sense of danger. Because, like, there is some violence in this movie that I was actually really disturbed by. And I was like, oh,
there's
God.
They get away with it by making the violence aimed at robots. So it's not like you see, like, human body parts flying around or, like, nobody gets
so
much as...
But look like humans.
No human gets so much
no,
as
No, that's
scrape,
not entirely
yes,
true, because they blasted cops to dust.
Oh, that's true.
That's true.
There was, like,
but
that
there's no blood.
And it was...
And
well, it's
the MPA
practically like
blood.
Incinerating a human being right in front of you.
It was a little
it's
Transformers
blood that the
for
MPA
me
hates.
Where I was like, what just happened? We were watching a fun family movie and then that happened.
You know, I'm not sensitive to those types of things at all. And that's like the first thing I thought was like, that's a bit
it
much, isn't
me.
It?
It just threw me because I didn't expect that from this like jaunty Disney movie. I was like, you just inviscerated some cops who were like not doing anything wrong. Like it was weird. But I mean, there are parts of this movie I like. I also like that Catherine Hahn and Keegan-Michael Key, who is my favorite part of Pitch Perfect 2, get to pop
that's
in.
Like
and
his
I just like
thing
it
now.
Work.
He's like being the best part of movies that Christy otherwise doesn't like. Is like his jam now.
I'm just gonna have to start tweeting it and be like, thanks. Not explaining why, just writing thanks.
That scene was pretty unnecessary though in the context of the
story.
No,
totally.
It looked really cool though. Like they were dressed all funky and it was set in this really cool shop with all this old school like movie and toy paraphernalia. I like that.
I have a suspicion that Brad Nerd is a comedy geek that was like, I'm going to bring in as many actors as I like that I can. Because, like, Judy Greer is in this movie for, like, 2 seconds.
I was thinking
you have
more
to listen
like,
for
he's
her,
like, now that we're...
you don't see her.
Like, now that this is a Disney movie and they own Star Wars, let's just shove in as many Star Wars toys as possible. Because that's all I saw in that shop.
There were also some Iron Giant toys, so
that's true.
And there was an Incredibles toy.
Yeah, so they weren't just promoting other Disney movies; they were also promoting other Brad Bird movies. Great.
Yeah. Which, like, the thing is that all those things hurt me because I was like, The Incredibles is so much better than this. Iron Giant. It's just like, the thing is that those movies to me were big on spectacle, but also had a story that really hit me at my core and made me want to reach out to it and connect to it. And I liked, like, you know, they have charming actors in this. Britt and George are charming. But I didn't really feel invested in their journey. I didn't really understand what they were doing. Like, it was really hard to feel on board. And considering it was Brad Bird, like, I think, you know, I was like, at first I was like not on board and I was confused. And then I just started getting mad where I was like, I expect so much more of you, sir.
Well,
and
like,
I just...
The movie was very repetitive. Like, when you think about it, how many times in this movie did Britt Robertson touch that pan and go, oh my God, did anybody see that? And then on top of that, it's like when they zip off in some sort of machine, like, first they go out of George Clooney's house in the bathtub. Then they transport themselves to like, a place, and then it happens again. That's three times, and that's part of the reason that the movie never moves forward, because it's the same shit happening over and over again.
Yeah, like, I thought a lot more of the movie would actually be in Tomorrowland, but we don't get there until very late, which felt strange to me.
And I have a major complaint about Tomorrowland, which is that, like, the first time you see it, it's fun. You're like, you're kind of, you see it for the first time with Britt Robertson's character, and you're just like, ooh, what is this place? And that's, like, the best, oh, actually, I lied. That is not the first time you see it, but my point being, that's, like, the most exploration you really get from that world, because after that, you don't really see it that much, and when you do, you don't really have any sense of what this place is. And, I mean, at first, it makes sense, because the characters themselves don't really know what it is, but at the end of the movie, I was like, I still don't understand. Is Tomorrowland a city, or, like, an entire planet? What happened to all the people living in it? Where did they go? What purpose does this place serve? Like, for all this movie keeps explaining things to you, it actually doesn't explain some really basic facts. Like,
that was one of the points I kept making when I was writing about the promotional campaign, is that all I wanted to see was more of Tomorrowland. Because I love when they create new worlds and cities and, like, you know, futuristic vibe where you can explore what people do on a daily basis and all that kind of stuff. But they were keeping it out of the promotional campaign, and I'm like, oh, good idea, Disney, you know? But, like, in the end, they're just, I mean, they pretty much put it all in the trailers. There just wasn't that much of it in the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was really surprised at how bad the world building is in this, because they would mention stuff like, oh, those are AAs, or this is Ultra Plus, but it still just feels like it has no relevance. Like, none of the stuff sticks to build a world that makes sense. And, you know, we were joking after the screening that Mad Max has just destroyed us for the rest of the summer, because Mad Max was so good at so many things. And, like, you know, having seen the world building in Mad Max, where every detail gives you a concept of part of this world, Tomorrowland didn't feel distinctive enough for me to feel like I understood this world, and the dialogue was not helping. It's another, and I don't dislike Lindelof. I appreciate his ambition and how he wants to take on big questions, but his inability to actually deal with those in a way that makes sense is just increasingly annoying.
All right, let's move into spoilers before I explode. So, spoilers for Tomorrowland. Spoilers. If you have not seen Tomorrowland and do not want the movie spoiled for you, stop watching now. Okay, here we go. I just don't get it. Like, it makes no sense at all.
I actually did not realize the ending didn't make sense until we talked after, because I was just so happy it was over that I was just like, and let's get out of here. And then you two asked me how it ended, and I was like, and so for those of you that haven't seen it, basically, the concept is essentially that there is a antenna that is predicting the end of the world, but also possibly causing people to drive themselves toward the end of the world. And so they tear it down, and then they bring new people to Tomorrowland. And I'm unclear if A, it's to fix the world so that it won't end, or B, it's just so that Tomorrowland can be a place where eventually all humanity can, like, go and be instead. I genuinely don't know.
How I took it, because there was a line that directly references in the movie, was that the damage has already been done, because all the bad shit has been projected to the world, and now they need to fix it. The problem with that ending, though, is just that there's no sense of urgency whatsoever. So, like, it's not going to make the audience think any of that. But then another problem I had with that is, why the fuck didn't Hugh Laurie's character just fix shit? Like, why didn't he call Frank and be like, make people happy again? Why did he let
Tomorrowland, where he lives,
to go to shit? Like, did he want to live in a wasteland? I just don't get what he wanted.
Well, like, I didn't understand the motive of the Hugh Laurie character. Like, why? Like, I understand being frustrated with humanity and maybe even giving up on humanity. But if you gave up on humanity, why bother pushing them to the brink?
It's
why
the
not?
Same, what effect did humanity have on him?
It's the same motive that Ultron had in Avengers Age of Ultron, which is basically that he just looks at humans and is like, oh, they're shitty. Fuck this. Destroy them all.
They just established no connection between Tomorrowland and the world,
also,
really.
Are the AAs robots? Because they call them that, but only after she's like, well, not actually. And I was like, so what are you supposed to be? Like,
I think they're robots.
Don't
she has you know, she's like made out of mechanical parts. She's a robot.
They're
That's
made
fine.
Out of mechanical parts, but I felt like there was supposed to be some implication that they are like are they like Ava or something where they are a robot but they have a sense of humanity or whatever? Like
yes.
I didn't really understand what
yes.
their deal was supposed
no,
to be.
No, she's like Ava. She's a robot, but she clearly has sentience because she's capable of caring about things and laughing and like, you know. So yes. But if we're ready to wrap up, overall, Tomorrowland, should anyone see it? Kids, adults, anyone, you guys?
I mean, like,
there's better
it's
stuff
not,
to say.
It's not offensive. I don't know. I'm honestly, I feel like the most positive thing I can say about this movie is there's no rape in it.
Oi.
Well, that's more than you could say for some movies.
I think there's some fun action sequences. Like, I thought the scene in George Clooney's house was pretty cool. And, like, some of the visuals are neat. But, yeah, is it worth spending the money? Because tickets are insanely expensive at this point. I'd say go see Mad Max. Even if you've seen Mad Max already, just go see that again.
I wouldn't say go out of your way to watch this movie, but that said, especially if you're watching it with kids, I think it's like a fun adventure. I mean, I know that even I have criticized it a lot, but when I was watching it, I was invested. I cared about the characters. I thought the action set pieces were entertaining. So mine is a very qualified, like, sure.
All right. So that's it for Tomorrowland.
Let's hope for a better next week,
yeah,
guys.
Really.
Let's hope for a better Tomorrowland.
I knew you were going to do that.
I would like that. That is a wrap on episode 67 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You can find us all over the web on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. We're also on iTunes, where we would love if you could rate and comment. And then we're on Facebook. Please go like us there. We are on Twitter, at Popcorn Prosecco. And then we have a website, popcornprosecco.com. And all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to take it first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I'm at Christy Puchico on Twitter. That's KristyPuchko. And I write all over the internet. I'm doing recaps on spinoff for Game of Thrones, and you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com. Right now, I have a fun piece of Vanity Fair, so go check that out. It's all about some of my favorite movies of the year, including Slow West, Ex Machina, Avengers Age of Ultron, and Mad Max Fury Road.
All right, and I'm at pnemeroff on Twitter, and you can catch my writing on collider.com. So thank you guys so much for watching, and until next week.
Hey, guys, check this out.
Whoop, whoop.